20 years.
Something like that. I just got off the phone with my sister, and she wanted to make sure that I said hello.
Hi. So when did you guys leave Zambia? Was it sporadically, or did you all leave at the same time?
No. Well, we each left. I left when I was 18. Yeah. Beth left when she was 18, and then Daniel, my parents moved. They left Zambia when my sister graduated from high school and moved to Kenya. And so my brother's the last 3 years of my brother's education, mom and dad were technically based in Kenya, not Zambia. So
excellent.
I guess he left. I think he left Zambia when he was 15 or so, I guess.
Yeah.
So 18 and 15. Yeah.
And when did you guys move to Zambia? Because were you guys born and bred Zambian, or did you move when you were younger? What happened?
No. Yeah. So Beth and I were just talking about this. We moved over to Zambia, to Ndola, in January of 1997. I was 8. Beth had just turned, she had just turned 7. And then my brother Daniel was 4. Actually, Beth may have turned. She may have actually been the first one to have a birthday. I think she was.
Yeah.
Because her birthday's at the end of January. So, I think she was. She just turned 7 right when we got there. So we missed first term at Sakeji. What took you there?
I was born in Sweden, but when I was 6 weeks old, we moved to Mozambique. My dad is Zimbabwean, and mom is Swedish. So they had actually met in Zambia. So we moved to Mozambique when I was born. My brother was born in Zim. And then what happened, we were actually living in Ndola, but we went to one of the Hindu schools because mom was a teacher there in Ndola. I'm not sure what happened because Martin and mom stayed in Ndola for 97. Martin didn't come out till 98. So I went to boarding school for a year without him. But I don't know why they did that and didn't keep me at Ndola. Maybe I was that much of a bother. They're just like, let's get rid of her. She's too annoying. She needs boarding school. She needs someone to tell her how to live her life.
You know what? Did you ride back with us from Sakeji? A couple of times?
I'm sure I must have. I'm sure.
I think you did.
I'm kicking myself because
Paul's coming back to me.
I know. I mean, Sakeji was such a big deal for me, but my memory is still terrible. So I've got chronic fatigue syndrome. So I know why my memory is terrible, but it still drives me nuts because all these people are telling me stories. I'm like, geez, I don't remember that. I don't remember that at all.
At least you have an excuse.
This is what
I don't have an excuse.
There's no excuse.
I don't have an excuse at all.
Oh, man. So you got to stay in Zambia for a long time, hey? Was it home?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I still think of Ndola, 56 Quattro Road, as my home for sure.
And that's what you've
called
blog, isn't it? You've got, what is it, a blog, a newspaper? I did a little bit of research, trying to be professional.
Yeah.
But what is Quattro Road? Tell me more about it.
Quattro Road is my online publication.
And
it's kind of, I don't know how much you remember of Ndola, but living right on Quattro Road, we kind of had ringside seats, if you will, to the world as it went by.
Yeah.
And I just remember being so I interacted with so many different people. The school kids would walk by early in the morning, people are going to work. We had the petrol filling station, BP right next door. We had, the people would come by, thinking that we're a charity. They would ask for money for their tuberculosis, medication, or they're hungry. And so they'll come and ask us for food. It's just And then we were right next to the university, or right across the street from a university. And then we were right next to a theological college. And so we're interacting with students and faculty. And it was just, it was such, I feel like I had front row seats to the, to this like very creative kind of generative space. and so really like, that's all Quatcha Road is. It's like, I'm just writing about this, the world, much like I observed growing up. I'm a spectator to this like immense kind of symphony of activity and creation and just very interesting people. And I so I just write about that. That's all I do.
That's fantastic. Like,
yeah. I call it the path of creativity, because that like that's kind of the best way that I can describe Quatcha Road when we first got there. And then like by the time we left, it was like a highway of creativity. Like, it was like nonstop vehicles all night, all day. Like didn't stop. Because the, you know, the pace of development was just it was like you know, it was an exponential increase year over year. And so Zambia, when we arrived in 97 and when I left in 2006, they were worlds apart.
Yeah. But also, isn't the only highway, motorway, whatever you call it, is actually between Lusaka and Ndola, like in all of Zambia? It's like the only properly tarmacked motorway.
No. Do you remember the dual carriageway between Ndola and Kitwe?
Yes.
There was the dual carriageway. That was the other like major highway. And it was the nicest road in the freaking country. It was great.
No potholes.
Yeah, no potholes. No, that's exactly right. It's like there's no potholes and there was four lanes. I mean, it was like you had two lanes, the opposite side of the road had two lanes. You didn't have to get stuck behind trucks. It was amazing. And then you hit Kitwe and it's like potholes from there into the, you know, into purpose. I remember my dad being so angry about the road from Chingola to Solwezi that he said, and I quote, "When Frederick Chiluba dies, he should have to drive this road every day."
That's quite good. Although I've got to ask you now, do you not really miss potholed roads since leaving Africa?
You know, I have a love of potholes. I think they're I think that it's like it's a feature of a more interactive world. I think they're brilliant. Like, you have to be paying attention.
A friend of mine,
or you may break your axle.
Yes. Well, yes. So a friend of mine lives up here in Scotland. She lives on the back of a quarry, an old quarry. So it's a really, really potholed road to get there. And she loves being in the car with me because besides the other people that she lives with, I'm the only other person like guns down that road. She's like, everyone else is driving like 10 miles an hour going really slow. And she's like, but not you, Marlene. It's like, you're not even scared. I'm like, it is my mission to hit every pothole I can find. Like, this is my only escape from Scotland.
I think you and I may have different strategies then of how we engage the potholes. I don't try and hit them all. I just view it as like a feature of driving that you have to stay engaged and like constantly be on the lookout. You know?
Yes, but when you hit one, does it not give you the biggest smile ever because you're like, oh, this is like back home?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always a little bit worried that I've just punctured my tire, but yeah.
Yeah. But then the, you know, reasonable adult kicks in and goes, oh no, you shouldn't be driving over potholes. But the child within you that misses running through mud holes is like, yeah, this is good.
That's right. Yeah. That's funny. That's so interesting. Like I feel like we grew up, you know, we like hit the age of independence. Instead of at 18, we hit it at 8, or 6, you know, or Beth was 7.
Yeah.
I think Daniel was 6 when he went. I mean, it's just like an incredibly truncated childhood in a sense, where all of a sudden you became very responsible at a very young age.
I mean, we were away from our parents for 3 months at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. 3 months. And what's more, like, I know for me, like that became normal. Yeah. That was my measurement of of how education was supposed to be, and any deviation from the three-term, like 3 month on, 1 month off, that was the abnormal bit. Was like any deviation from that, and that's so hard to explain to people.
Yeah,
it's so hard to explain to people because people are like, "Oh, how was it going to boarding school?" I'm like, it was normal. That was my life. Like, I don't know. I think it's abnormal. That was my life.
Exactly.
Like, it was great. I enjoyed it. What was it like going to public school? Like, was that weird? Like, I think that they think that I think my upbringing was weird, and it's not. It's what I know as normal. They're the abnormal ones.
Exactly. It's like whenever you start talking about your past, someone's like, "Why don't like? Are you okay? Is this okay?" I was like, "It's just my life.
This is
just what happened. Yeah. It's normal to me." Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
But it's only when you look back, like having lived in like a Western society for such a long time, and you look back on scenarios of, yeah, we ate flying ants, and yeah, we did crawl around the bush looking for random things at boarding school. And
yeah.
You mean it's not normal to have your kid leave you for 3 months when they're 7 years old?
Right.
And then you go, okay, maybe we did have slightly abnormal childhoods.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's true. There's kind of a base. I think that normal is just relative. It's relative to the experiences of the collective around you, right? Yeah. Like that's all it is. So all of the people that we went to school with, Zimbabwean, Zambian, Brit, Sweden or Swedish, Canadians, Americans, Kiwis, Australians, all of those kids, like we're all just in the same boat together.
Yeah.
And that was normal for us. Just like, we kind of, at the end of term, we scatter to the four winds. And then at the beginning of term, we all come back. It's like,
and had tell great me about stories your strength to life. Share.
Right.
So yeah. I'm getting you love collecting stories probably as much as I do then with Quatra Road and things. So was it just Ndola, or did you find that Sakeji influenced your love of stories as well?
That's a very good question. I think that that's a really good question. I think that stories are kind of a way of linking disparate worlds, mm-hmm. if you will. And they're kind of I think that there's kind of a base level kind of common human experience, and then those stories appeal to that kind of base level, and then go exploring from there. So they like draw you in, and then they lead you to this new space, and other people's stories are just so fascinating because if they do a good job of telling you, I mean, over time you can even think that you did it. I mean, that's you know, like I think story is just baked into the human psyche. Like it's how we understand ourselves. It's how we understand others. It's how we understand the world around us. Stories matter, both internal and external stories. Like the stories we tell ourselves, the stories we tell other people. It's story is one of the foundational elements of our society. No matter what your society is, I think that it's one of the foundational elements. So
well,
you've
managed to explain it much better than I've ever done. So well done. I'm going to use that now.
I don't know about that.
So it sounds like, I mean, Zambia was obviously very exciting, but it sounds like you've had a really exciting life past the cagey days.
I guess you don't know any of my backstory since Sakeji, right? And I don't know any of yours either. So we need to kind of get this out.
Perfect.
So I went from Sakeji, and we spent just like there were two 9 month stints back in the States from Sakeji all the way through my when I was 18 and left home. But States, then Beth and I both went on to Rift Valley Academy in Kenya.
Nice.
And so I did kind of middle school, and I guess the British would call it secondary school. We call it high school. I did high school. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. High school at Rift Valley Academy, graduated from there. And then enlisted in the Marine Corps, was stationed on the West Coast of the United States, kind of went and played in the sandbox in the Middle East, came back, got out, went to college at Patrick Henry College, just outside of Washington, D.C., and then came down to Texas in search of the American dream, I guess. I don't know, whatever that means. I tell people that Texas is like the closest that I can get to Africa and still be in the United States. Because there's still like people drive big trucks and they have weapons and like you're expected to carry a chain in your truck, you know. I mean, if you live in like Dallas, which I happen to, if you live in Dallas, then you can get away with like, you know, a BMW M3 or something like that. But when you live out in West Texas or out on a ranch, like it's kind of that same, it takes some skill to live in a lot of these areas, right? Where it's a little, you have to rely on yourself and what you possess. And so that feature kind of has it's like a one for one, like from the way we lived at Tsukiji to like kind of ranch West Texas, very similar. I actually think they're very similar.
Yeah.
When my family has visited me, when I lived out in West Texas, they thought the same way, or they thought the same thing. But anyway, that is a very serious tangent there. So came down to Texas, jumped into oil and gas, started working on the rigs. Yeah, I did like some pretty rough work, almost got killed a couple times. And then I was like, okay, maybe I should try and do something a little more intelligent and less manual labor intensive. So I joined a management training program with an oil and gas company out in West Texas, worked out there for a long time. And then I was, I left there, kind of became an infrastructure development consultant for oil and gas companies.
Yeah.
And then I've been doing that since then up until recently when everything kind of fell apart. And that's where, you know, kind of in the downtime, I'm like, you know what? I like to write. I'm going to do Quattro Road. And then trying to go a different route with the business consulting stuff as well. So that's kind of
cool. That is a huge running one, but that cool. No, you make total sense. That makes complete, and especially I think for us that grew up in so many different cultures, we noticed that change so much more acutely because we're used to needing to reassess who we are dependent on the culture that we're in at that time.
Very much so. Very much so. And yeah, which leads to both. Yeah. That has like a positive effect of like we're constantly reevaluating, but then in the same sense, it also, how do you say this? Like we kind of lack a sense of groundedness because we're constantly like changing into something new based on our surroundings.
And it's like we can never figure out who we are because we're always changing because of where we end up.
Yeah.
Because we've had to learn to fit in.
Yeah, I find it very interesting that in the international like expat or third culture kid community, what we like when we find commonality, it's never in place. It's always in people. It's in the people that are just like us, right?
Yeah.
It's actually like you and I. Like here, you're half Swedish, half Zimbabwean, grew up in Europe and in Africa. I am obviously by my accent a like Southern American, right? But I also grew up in Zambia and Kenya. And there's this, like, I think we both, maybe you would admit to this. I certainly would. I think I've lived in 15 different places in my life. And I haven't been alive that long to have lived in 15 different places. And there's a kind of like restlessness or like, yeah, I'm not quite as rooted. And so where do I find, you know, belonging and
where's home? Enjoy,
like I really am able to dig in. Well, it's in people. It's in conversations like this.
That makes so much sense. I haven't talked to you in 20 something years. Because I always joke with my friends and I say, like, well, basically I'm just a hippie. Like, I'm a traveler. I'll go anywhere. Like, I love having my flat here and I love living here. But if someone walked up to me and said, do you want to move to Tahiti tomorrow? I'd be like, yeah, okay, sure. Why not? I'll find friends there. It'll be great. And it's like that. Well, like you said, it's like that wondering. You're always keen to see what another part of the world will be like. But then you're also like, oh, but where is home? Like, where are my roots? I used to be so jealous of people that had lived in the same place their whole life and had friends that they had, like, become friends with since they were toddlers. I'm like, how do you guys even do that? But on the other hand, we have experienced so much and seen so many cultures, and our worldview is just way out there that I wouldn't change it. But in small moments, I'm like, where is home? But yeah, it comes down to the people.
Here's the thing that's really interesting about that, because I've like kind of rolled out that line as well numerous times in trying to explain myself to others. And I think, especially in the West, that has this high esteem of traveling and of sightseeing and kind of tourism and all that stuff. When we say that, it comes across as elitist or prideful or something like that, right? Yeah. I really think it comes across in a way that we actually don't intend it at all.
No.
Like, and what the interesting thing is, just to go back to like kind of a point that we made about boarding school, is like, that's how we understand normal.
Yeah.
And that's all we have to appeal to. Like, that's the only way that we have to understand ourselves. It's not like a way of describing some of our activities. It is the way that we describe our being. Like,
this kind of
very transient person. It's not a transient, you know, kind of activity. It's not like that. It's just like who we are.
We could be in the same place for 12 years but still feel like we're walking around or we're wandering or whatever it is. But it's what that really triggered as well is, I don't know if it's the same for you, but when I travel, I don't want to be with the tourists. I'm like, no, I want to absorb the culture. I want to find out what this place is really like. So I find it really difficult to think of going on like a week's vacation somewhere, because I'm like, I won't get to know anything in a week. Go for a few months, live there, work there, get a job. But it's like, I have to consume that culture, not just go visit it for a few pints.
the perks of an EU passport.
Yes, I am very lucky.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying right there. I'm jealous, incidentally. But
you just need to find another way to get a passport in another country, mate.
Trust me, I've thought about it long and hard.
So this is probably a silly question, considering what I know about your history now. But do you find that you're attracted to going into situations that are more risky?
Yes, 100%. Okay, cool. No, definitely. In fact, I've kind of, part of this is also military training. Part of this is Africa. Mm-hmm. I think that just a function of our space is just, and we've talked about it already, is this awareness of your surroundings. This awareness of adapting to, it's just a kind of a hyper vigilance that is just deeply ingrained in you.
Yeah.
And yes, definitely. So I am actually almost more comfortable. I'm actually incredibly comfortable in emergencies. Like,
yeah.
it's unreal. It really is. It's like, no, this, because, and it, I've thought about this. It's like, it has a clarifying effect. Mm-hmm. It like, it strips out all of the kind of superficialities and all of the noise and the distractions. And all of a sudden, what is like, what needs to happen is very obvious to me. It's very obvious, like right in front of you. It's like, yeah. Oh, okay. And yeah, it's, I love that. When I was in college, I like volunteered at the local, I guess it would be emergency medical services, like ambulance or rescue squad.
Yeah.
I just love that. I love that space. That honestly was like too formulaic for me. Because there's like a procedure. Like, okay, well, if we come up on a car crash, here's what we do. Get the crash bag. And then it's like, oh, okay. So there's a procedure for this. We just typically flew by the seat of our pants. And like, the better you were at that, the better your outcome. So you remember those, that like horrific Charlie Hebdo attack in Paris?
Yes.
Yeah. Like gunmen on the street and everything. The yeah. US State Department issued a travel advisory for France and was like, be careful, like traveling to France. And like they ratcheted up the like threat level. Yeah. And I remember my immediate reaction was, they've said I shouldn't go here. I immediately booked a trip to Paris with my brother and a friend that had never been out of the country. Like literally immediately. And I even like told all my friends, I'm like, they're saying we don't go. That means all of the tourists are going to go away. We can go and have a great time. It's going to be fantastic.
And worst thing about getting on holiday is being surrounded by tourists.
Then we went and there's like, it's kind of surreal. Cause like here, the French military was patrolling its own capital.
Yeah.
Like, man, you know, that like, that's kind of a blast from Africa. Like that, yeah. That's like, but I imagine that was like very weird for Americans to see.
Yeah.
Like French troops like patrolling down the streets. Like, oh, well, this is just like kind of par for the course in some areas of the world.
So I was really lucky because I was there a week before COVID shut everything down. And In fact, I was supposed to fly back through Paris the weekend it got shut down. So I would have been stuck in Paris, but we flew me out of Ukraine back to London on the Friday. On the Saturday, I was supposed to fly back into Paris. So I was there the week before and I was expecting mass tourists everywhere. I was like, I'm getting everywhere really, really easily. Like there's not long queues. This is really relaxing. I'm really enjoying myself. Paris is great.
Here, I'll ask you this question.
Oh dear.
What is your favorite book from Africa or about Africa?
Ooh, that's a hard one. Because there's so many to read. I think I've really enjoyed the series, and the name's gone out of my head, but she wrote Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight.
Alexandra Fuller?
That one. She's a family friend as well. So I really enjoyed that one.
I was actually going to ask if you knew her. Yeah.
Yeah. But then the other one that I really liked, and I can't remember the name, but it's a lady that walked all over the world. So I've read her book of when she walks across Australia, but she does one when she walks from, I think she does from South Africa and works her way up. And that
yeah,
one
it's something
really
about
good.
The Limpopo, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know which book you're talking about. I know which one. It's like South of the Limpopo or something like that.
Something like that. And it was really good. But then you really get nostalgic. And like at the minute I'm watching a TV series and it's based in Congo. And there's military, it's called The Widow, but I just sit there and I'm like, oh, I just love this. And when I watched Blood Diamond, you could not get me to stop crying. Have you seen it yet?
Yeah, I watched Blood Diamond. There's another one. Oh goodness, I'm blanking. I think it's a Netflix one about child soldiers.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm blanking. Oh, anyway. That one was definitely the hardest one that I've had to watch. I thought like Tears of the Sun and Blood Diamond and all that. It seems so fake, you know?
The part with the Blood Diamond that got me was when he was dying and he was holding the earth in his hand. That's the part. Every single time I cry because I'm like, that's how I feel. Like, that's the earth. Like, we never, ever leave. Africa's always a part of who we are.
That's so interesting because your childhood is associated literally with the earth, See, my childhood is associated with education and people.
That's not so amazing.
Much, not so much the specific ground.
Yeah.
I love it. I can, you know, picture myself on the dusty like paths right now.
Yeah.
But it's very much more centered on education and on the people, on the relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so cool.
I need to find that Netflix.
Yes. Because I've definitely missed that. I don't think I've seen it. Anything Africa gets me. And you get that like homesickness and you just miss it and the people and the just everything. I've started listening to Zambian music a lot over the last few weeks. Yeah. I've been very homesick.
that movie or that, it's kind of a documentary movie thing. It's called Beasts of No Nation.
Beasts of No Nation. Okay, I'm going to write that up. That'll be what I'll be binge watching tomorrow. Well, I need like tissues, popcorn. What's the accompaniment to this movie?
You may need an intermission.
Okay, I can organize that.
It is heavy. That's my favorite book is Cry the Beloved Country. Even though it's about apartheid South Africa.
Yeah.
And it's just about that racial dynamic. And I spent very little time in South Africa. I only spent probably a week, maybe a week and a half in South Africa.
Yeah.
But I remember that was actually the first place that I ever saw racism. Was like, even though it was post-apartheid.
Yeah.
I watched a black couple get turned away from a restaurant in Cape Town. And I remember perplexed as to like what had just happened.
Yeah.
And anyway, I was so young. I didn't understand that you would judge somebody like that and like choose to like separate yourself.
Yeah.
It's a good read. It's a challenging read. There's also a really good book, kind of more on the economics or business side. Mm-hmm. Dayo Olupade, I think. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but that one's called The Bright Continent, and it's a great book as well. Kind of much like very optimistic, and talks about like kind of kanju creativity, like where you know, they just kind of made do with, like, for example, when you need hot, like there's a, if you needed hot water, you would like, I have a picture of somebody took one of those like instant, like water heaters with like the heating element and they attached it to their faucet. Like they drilled a hole and like put their faucet into it. And yeah. And like, that's how they would get their like hot water.
Wow.
It's like, it's like just like doing what you can with what you have.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Anyway.
Don't send any book recommendations my way.
How late is it there?
11 o'clock.
Oh, gosh.
Thanks, man.
I think I'm going to get a nap now or something. I don't know.
Take a nap. How old are you again?
I'm, 22 going on 73.
Perfect age to be going for naps. To be fair, naps are pretty amazing, so I don't blame you.
Well, thanks. This has been a real pleasure, Marlene. Thanks for your time.
Cheers. I'll talk to you later.